Hello and welcome. Welcome to the TOVG Podcast. So here. I almost said Tovelcast. I almost said Clustercast, but we have like a regular TOVG.
Standard store brand TOVG podcast.
Yeah, the kind with like no art on the box. It's just aww, a blank orange square that says TOVG podcast on it.
Inside, it's like the fruity O's, right?
It's like when you accidentally grab the NyQuil that looks like NyQuil, but it's not, and it's like $5 cheaper, and you're like, wait a minute.
And instead of being called NyQuil, it's called like NQuil.
It's like nighttime flu medicine TM.
Same ingredients as NyQuil.
Night Quiver.
Sure it is. Sure it is.
Have you guys ever had Dr. Ah?
No. It sounds like a soda, though.
Yeah. It's like, I wish I could remember the name of the grocery store. There's some really, really skeezy Kentucky chain of grocery stores that's like, it evokes the same kind of Southern American uneasiness that names like Piggly Wiggly do. But they have a store brand of soda called Dr. Ah. That's the Dr. Pepper equivalent. And that name, it just makes me want to like shrivel up and turn into a little crisp in the sun on the hot pavement.
Dr. Ah.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds like an artist who pioneered some like niche form of some music.
Oh,
that,
my
like,
God. Yeah.
Like no one really knows about them, but like they totally were the person who like spawned the whole movement.
The kind of people who like live in a minimalist glass house in Northern California.
Yeah.
So we talk
about
video games.
NorCal viewers.
Well, that's where like San Francisco is. I don't know. So yeah, we talk about video games on this podcast sometimes, in this blank white store brand podcast that you just kind of shake open the box and Jimmy Belikoff and Matt Visual and George Weedman fall out in blank white t-shirts and black work pants.
Whoa.
This sounds like a music video now.
Yeah. 90s.
I know what that hotline. Blank
what have you been playing
blocks,
this week, George?
I've been playing The Witcher.
The DLC, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I'm gonna do the new one, but first I wanted to do the old one to get caught up, and it's really freaking good. I made a video about it earlier today that's full of spoilers, so you guys probably can't watch it, but takeaway points, it is a retelling of an old Polish myth/legend that later on got turned into movies and plays. And it was so fun to do research on this thing because I found an old 1936 black and white Soviet era Polish movie about this fairy tale. And the guy's costume is totally the same costuming they used for the game.
That's great.
And like, I freaking love The Witcher because it's like that. Like it evokes in the marketing and the, music and the tone of the trailers, it evokes this flavor of like an edgy, grim, dark, violent, dark fantasy ripe for the American marketplace. But if you look just like a little deeply into it, you find this like really kind of humble and genuine Polish cultural export that has a shitload actually of references that it seems like the company just wants to export to the rest of the world and show the global market some cool things about their culture they might have never known about otherwise. And so they sneak it in to this sexy, violent, dark fantasy for for the rest of us. And I think that is like one of the most pure, like sacred, harmless goals to video gaming in general. And like of all the ways you could make an argument for games being art, I think this is really one of the like closest and most efficient way that mainstream games can do that.
Sounds dope.
I can't wait to get through it. I've been waiting. I just want all the DLCs to be out so I can just go right through them and play the game all over again.
Well, I think that just happened. They released a big quality of life patch along with this new DLC, and this is supposed to be the final Witcher product for like a 6-year period. I don't know. Like, I guess they could still make it IRL Gwent. But until then, I broke my rule for not buying merchandise. And for $20, ordered the Dinky Collector's Edition IRL Gwent starter packs.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's those exist. I think they're reprints from the cards that are in the card game in the game. But since that card game was meant for a video game where you travel across the land and build up your deck and just kind of like win past countless little mooks before having a game you pay attention to, I've read very few articles on it that describe what it plays like in real life. But I've heard it's a lot more of a casual game in real life than you'd expect. Like by video game mini game standards, it's like one of the most complicated and involved ones out there. Mm-hmm. But by real life collectible card games, all of a sudden it's competing against the likes of franchises like Magic and Pokemon that have existed for 20 years that it can't really hope to stack up to.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting.
You can't like just go to Target and Walmart and pick up a pack, can you?
Of Gwent?
Yeah.
It's
not that big, right?
Not at all. Not at all. Oh, what I ordered
It's just
a
little thing.
Yeah, very limited edition, collector's edition, super fan merchandise. Have to send CDPR a screenshot of the games in your library, and then you get a code in your inbox that you redeem on their partner store at Jinx. And then they promise to order you these cards whenever they get printed. The current ship date is July 11th, so I think I only have to wait a month. But for $20, it sounds like For $20 and like the hilarious fun that will be Gwent Nights at George's Place, I'm really, really quite all right with buying dorky merchandise for pretty much the first time in years upon years.
So you bought both of them together, I'm assuming, because they look like they're $10 each.
Yeah. So the way it works is in the game, you have four different decks you can build that are based on four primary factions in the game, one of which is monsters, which is hilarious. The way that one works is you have a lot of low level cards that get summoned onto the table all at once. So you kind of like swarm the other player with all of these like Zerg rushing that you do. And you can order two decks or four decks, and I ordered four decks because I'm easily separated from my money for the first time ever, and it's just because, God, I love The Witcher.
Well, sick. I mean, I look forward to a review of that. I'm much more likely to play a Gwent card game than the entirety of The Witcher 3 at this point.
It goes surprisingly smoothly. I don't know. Like after surprisingly smoothly. Yeah.
Sounds delicious.
After a year of playing MGS5 and Dark Souls games and Bloodborne, the controls and combat of The Witcher have already aged after just 1 year. Mm-hmm. But the storytelling in these games is top notch.
Right.
And that's what I come for.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I can take any time out of my really busy Overwatch schedule to play any Witcher.
That reminds me of what Willie said. Willie was like, "What?" I was like, "How do you live with your life without playing The Witcher?" And he's just like, "Well, I do have 80 hours of my life that I can spend on whatever I want."
Yeah.
And I'm like, I wasn't serious. And he was like, totally like, no, I don't want to waste my time.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I don't think it would be a waste of time. The problem is that I think I would enjoy The Witcher a lot. So then I would start dividing my time between, because I still want to play Overwatch all the time. So I'd be dividing it between like, all right, do I play Overwatch right now? Do I play Witcher in my free time? And that's just too big of a decision for this one man
to
make.
So is Overwatch really hooking you?
Oh yeah. I've fucking played probably too much, to be honest, but
excellent.
I had a couple light work days in the past week, so I got some solid hours in.
Good. I am happy to hear that, because I think one of the things that people were discussing on this podcast, I don't know if you were there for these episodes when they're doing the Overwatch beta, was how it might not actually have a lot of long-lasting appeal.
I think that from what I can see, from being not a since vanilla TF2 player, but a pretty long time TF2 player. Mm-hmm. I can see this if they just like wait a few months and then add a couple maps and maybe like, you know, put in a different game mode or something. If they just trickle out stuff like that, this will have very long-lasting appeal. Because I think there's about a dozen maps right now, and I'm not bored of any of them. Like, there's only one map, and it's that Temple of Anubis map that I still, every time we get it, I'm like, ugh. But
the one you made a video about.
Well, no, I didn't make a video about it. I want to, but I don't think I'm going to anymore. I have different things about Overwatch that I'd rather talk about. But yeah, like all, I think that the game can use some tweaking, which they're doing because they've already discussed a balance patch coming up because a lot of competitive stuff has started up with Overwatch, a lot of tournaments and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the tournament metagame is very, it's like, very clearly moving into a specific point.
They wasted no time, which is funny because I remember reading some news stories about a controversy over them lagging behind on some kind of competitive mode. Do you know the details of that?
Oh, yeah. They released in the open beta. They had like a beta of the like essentially ranked mode. And they actually addressed that in this interview with I think it was the project lead or something like that was talking about that they're working to get the competitive mode like refined and out before they do the balance patch, but the balance patch is going to come out like immediately afterward. And for those of you out there who do play Overwatch, because I don't think either of you guys do, well, I know Matt said he played with his friend because his friend wanted him to, but
yeah PS4 and that's yeah. Ooh, newbies on PS4, it's delicious. Delicious. It's
I can only imagine.
Drastic difference between playing on PC on PS4 because you could see like they don't aim right, you know.
Oh really?
Yeah, you can see it. You can see that they missed
the right
shots.
Input.
Yeah, I mean some of them are good obviously when people actually learn a controller, just like Street Fighter, you know, people can still like Snake Eyes can use a controller and still win tournaments, but like it's a lot easier, like the learning curve is a lot easier on
keyboard.
Yeah.
I mean just in general, for a long time I was like whatever, play on whatever you want, but like in a game like Call of Duty, I think that's fine. I think you could still play pretty much the same on a controller, but like a lot of the characters in Overwatch require these like, oh, whip around and then like immediately like turn 180 degrees and then turn 180 degrees again. And like, yes. Console, like unless you have your sensitivity maxed, like it's not going to be that easy. But then if it's maxed, it's going to be hard to aim.
I love that shit. So, I'm a little jelly of Overwatch players. I when I first heard about how fast the game actually was, like I think that happened on the podcast. One of you guys compared it to Quake and I was or not to Quake, but rather to playing Scout in TF2. And I was like, oh, and yeah. I was going to be requesting a review copy, but then. But then Doom and The Witcher expansions and MomoCon all happened on Overwatch launch week.
Yeah.
And I will get into it later, but not now. But I want to play a game where you have to aim and think fast so bad again. Those don't come out enough. And I really like that we're going through a trend now where it seems like that unrequited desire is now becoming a market that developers are filling.
Yeah, and it's cool to see people learning the characters, and like of course there's all the, like the play of the game memes and everything, but like sometimes you just see like actual really cool play of the games and you're like, oh, I didn't know you could play a character like that, like that's a really interesting strategy. And
So how does play of the game work? Because I the most I know is a video I saw of Tommy Wiseau in the room swiping a bunch of shit off his shelves.
Yeah,
as like whooshy noises were playing and it said Tommy Wiseau eliminates picture frames.
Yeah. So this is the other thing that like has been sort of a point of contention amongst people, because essentially how play of the game works, and they've actually addressed this in another interview, that they're really working on trying to get play of the game like spruced up so that it actually highlights, you know, some of the best plays and not just a person who got a lot of kills back to back. But typically what it does is, since Overwatch is an objective based game and it's not just deathmatch, it will weigh things like killing an enemy that's blocking you from capturing a point, or killing enemies that are pushing a payload, more heavily than just a regular kill. So like if I say got like, you know, 5 kills in a short amount of time, which is a very difficult thing to do with most characters, that might be weighed almost equally to somebody
like Junkrat, right?
Just, yeah, you know, like,
just press a button and just roll his stupid bomb.
It makes a loud noise. It's your problem to get out of the way, okay?
Okay.
But like if it was someone like say Mercy the healer with her ultimate, and like say they like wipe 3 people of your team out and they're pushing the payload and it's like right at the end and you res those 3 people and they're on the point when you res them, that's going to be weighed heavily because of like the like how relative it is to completing the objective and like doing like,
because
and
I, so, I never got it as Mercy, never, and that stuff happens all the time.
Rare.
Yeah,
it's very rare.
They save like it, I said, you just don't get the play of the game,
right? And like that's why you see usually, you know, you see like Bastion's getting play of the game because like he pulls out so much damage and it's beneficial for him to sit on or near or watching a capture point or the payload, so that most of his kills just end up being on the payload by sheer convenience. And so it's very easy for a Bastion to get play of the game in that regard. Very easy for, you know, Junkrat or Pharah to get play of the game with their ultimates because they kill a bunch of people and they often do it on the point because that's where people cluster up. So I know people have been like complaining that that's like, oh, here comes this Bastion's fucking turret shooting people. But it's like, well, he did technically do a lot of good things in that. It's like maybe not impressive to watch, but like might have been one of the most helpful things that happened for that team. But like they said, they're going to be trying to work it out so that like the algorithms detect a lot more subtle things. Like they, one of the specific things they talked about was like playing Widowmaker and getting a headshot on a completely stationary target who's maybe AFK or just not even like thinking, versus getting a headshot on a Tracer that's like dashing behind your team. Like those should be weighed differently, and they're really working to try and like make that happen, which I think is cool.
How long is the play of the game segment?
Oh, it's like 10-15 seconds maximum.
So do they just show one player's hottest 10-15 seconds, or do they like cobble together a procedural highlight reel?
Oh, it's one player. It's like, so like even if multiple players contributed to a play of the game, like for example, I got one that I thought was my play of the game like last night sometimes, where I was Zarya and I used her black hole thing and I thought I just like wrecked 4 people by myself, and it turns out my friend was Pharah and he was perched up on top of a building like a mile away, saw me black hole those people and was just shooting rockets in there the whole time, and so he ended up doing a lot more damage than I did. I pulled them together but he killed all of them, and so he got it, but it definitely like I was obviously highlighted in there as like, well, you can see it's my ultimate, okay, so you know I helped.
I know this is hard, but it would have been cool if you had seen your ultimate. It, first, the camera's on you. You see your, right, you throw your ultimate, and then it switches to Pharah. That would just be ridiculously cool to see. But yeah, I know it's hard to do something like that.
Yeah, if they implemented something like that, that would be great. Because then you could get, like, oh, play the game was Mercy and Genji together. Mercy rezzed Genji after he died, and then Genji ulted and killed fucking everybody. Like that would be a really cool thing to implement. I don't know if that would be possible. It'd be like fucking algorithms on algorithms.
Yeah,
but it would be cool to see something like that.
You see like the camera like fly out of your character and fly to oh dude,
go all slow motion, they exchange a glance and nod.
Yeah they do that, and they just like kind of put in those little quotes in there like they usually do when they talk
they
to each other.
They turn on their nano machines.
Yeah. Oh no, Fox die. Yeah, sorry. There's something about pachinko machines with that, but
that we'll get to later. I guess until then, okay, are you taking a Metal Gear break, or are you still chipping away at the snake mines?
I guess I took a little break. I got a little busy this past month, and I know people are like, where's another Metal Gear review? I'm currently working on that, so yeah, the fourth one. But I mostly been doing a little VR stuff. Little VR.
Oh. Do tell. Is it still
a real
only
game?
Okay.
Oh no! I love VR. I absolutely love VR. Like I'm the guy who's okay with buying being in the beginning, you know, okay. the mm-hmm. early adopter. Yeah, yeah, so yeah. like right. I'm not the really target that people want to hear. So yeah,
so I just like, you know, we've gone over that, but like quick question, burning question. Yeah. I'll keep saying it until you do it. Have you played Mirror's Edge yet?
No, I have not played Mirror's Edge.
Okay, well, next
yet.
Week I'll ask again.
what I was going to say is I played an actual real game, which is Chronos, mm-hmm. which is actually like a long RPG, kind of dark, very Dark Souls-y when it comes down to like map design and a little bit of the combat. Like each weapon has like their own style and mm-hmm. Quirks and stuff like that for heavy attack and soft attack, and a little bit of kind of Zelda. Not many puzzles. I wish there were more puzzles, but it's still like everything else where it's lacking depth. Like it's just like all these games are just lacking that little bit of like sweet spot that you usually get when you play like kind of games that are not VR right now. You know, right. especially with indie games. Like I've played so many indie games and they, you know, you expect a certain amount of I guess kind of completion. And Chronos is good. Is it a system seller? Hell no. Is it worth the money? $50? I feel like maybe just a little bit cheaper would be nice. It's a game where you're in you guys probably all have seen it, where you have fixed camera points. Mm-hmm. Since it's a long game, it's they want you to feel comfortable, and if you're like swinging the camera around or doing something like Lucky's Tale where the camera kind of falls behind the character, you might get sick. For this one, they have like kind of like the Resident Evil fixed cameras, but you're able to move the camera by just moving your head. And each time you go through like a door or something like that, it's just switched the camera. So it has like, you know, cinematography shots for each section. It does affect kind of like when you're fighting like enemies, you won't be able to see your character a lot. It doesn't happen a lot, but it does happen. It's weird. It's weird to say, but you know that whole thing where a lot of people are giving like good reviews to these games because it's just VR and no one will understand unless they play it. I understand that with this game more than any other game, because it really puts you in the game when you're in these like levels.
Yeah, but it's not like a first person immersive setup. It looks like Lucky's Tale in terms of control scheme and camera.
It's pretty, when it comes down to immersion, it's pretty solid. It's pretty solid in there because of the camera shots. Like it may not seem so, especially on a 2D screen when you're looking at it. It never illustrates exactly.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to come over again and find out in person.
it's good. I'm not saying it's like, oh, it's the same experience that you'll have, but like it's really, it does add to it. And it's probably the most immersive one that I've played, I would say.
From videos, because it looks like it was going for the Lucky's Tale. It looks like you're looking at a table full of toys, kind of effect, rather than
you're playing an action figure, forgetting
that you're in the real world and thinking that you're in the game world, that the high tech cockpits and first person gun aiming schemes seem to be going for.
Yeah, it's. Like, all right, when I say it's lacking depth, like, basically, you have a light attack and you hold the button to do a heavy attack and you always have a shield. Always have a shield. You have four stats to level up. You basically just pick...
Only four, two, yeah.
Only, it's, you it's basically only pick three of those, maybe even two, because one of them is vitality. Because each weapon has, like, different stats and you only get a handful of weapons, like, not even a lot. Like, it's very bare. It's just missing that little bit of touch, and it just doesn't have it. The bosses are cool. they do a lot of cool things. Like, for instance, if anyone has watched Doctor Who, they have like the Weeping Angels, where if you don't look, if you're not looking at the enemy, it moves. But when you look at it, it turns back to stone. It's incredibly creepy. Incredibly creepy. Probably one of the best moments in it, other than some of the boss fights that are really cool. But yeah, I wish they didn't play more with stuff like that. And it sucks that they didn't. Like, it was fun. I'll probably play it again with a different build now that I know what I'm doing. But it's just okay. It's just okay. I'm sorry. Like, I'm brutally honest. Like, I don't even care. Like, I spent $600 on it. I don't even care. Like, I'm gonna say that a game is garbage. I don't have this like magic that people tend to have when they spend a lot of money. No, I would talk smack. But
I'm going to be real defensive about my Gwent cards, and those are only $20.
I'm gonna go over and play that. I really want to see how that would work, especially with deck building, because I feel like you only have a handful of stuff. And
yeah, so instead of playing like a trading card game, I guess it would be one of those boxed card games, like Ascension, that that we were playing at MomoCon,
which was fun.
I just wish that you couldn't see the notebook lines of the art on the car.
Oh my gosh. He was nitpicking, guys, because he didn't understand the rules and he was getting very frustrated.
I understood them eventually. I didn't know you were supposed to be keeping two discard piles on hand. Whatever. Jimmy, have you heard of a card game called Ascension the God Slayer?
Can't say that I have.
Yeah, it's you know, one of those things. It was developed by one of those MTG players. Well, it's like, it's the kind of, you look at the box art and you're like, oh, it's one of those things. I'm not wrong, I don't think.
Tabletop games? I'm sorry. Am I the only one here who plays tabletop games?
I guess I don't get to play them very often.
I think you are. Cause
I would like to, but I just don't get.
When I saw the box for Ascension, my first thought was, wow, this is going to be super dorky. But when you figure it out, the rules are really simple. The game is placed fairly fast and efficiently. And what I also think is really interesting is that if we had done a long game and didn't quit out after the first pile of points were distributed, we would have eventually gone through every single card in that box, which means that after one game, everyone sitting at the table would know all the tricks. You pick up cards from a pile, throw them down as you need them. Then after you play them, you keep them. So it's like about strategically building a deck. It's a deck building game, and it's not complicated, but it does have a good degree of depth to it that I really appreciate by how it also makes its deeper mechanics more transparent by that game length and process of having every single player go through every card in the box within one game. So yeah, no, in real life, like, that's how Gwent would be working. I mean, I'm gonna be getting boxes of cards. It's not like I'll be getting a little starter pack that of 12 cards that I have to travel all across the land to get new ones with.
And just in case everyone's wondering, me and my wife tied for first place.
Yeah,
and everyone else lost.
Yeah, you guys were happened, okay. Yeah. And it's like, it's adorable that you and your wife, neither of you beat each other. You just tied. That's how you know the couple that ties together
stays
together.
Yes. I was trying to rhyme it, and I was like, lies together? No, wait.
Yeah, no,
cheating.
Anyways. Yeah, MomoCon was fun. Any stories? Matt, do you have stories or
stories? I saw a guy pick a booger and eat it.
Oh my gosh.
Like, he got in there. Like, he got don't you know how you screw something? Like, he was screwing his nose, picked out a big juicy one.
Oh, you
just
mean he gave it like the rotational
yes.
twirl? Oh.
He got the crust on the edges, you know?
No, dude. Did you have like a telescope?
Dude, I don't know, dude. I mean, my wife was walking and we saw him by the garbage can. You would think that he would put it in the garbage can.
He just ate it.
I guess it looked appetizing. I don't know.
Jesus Christ.
There's like dominoes like right outside the door. Like, I don't understand why he just didn't go out there if he was hungry. But hey, you know, maybe I don't know. I never tasted boogers, so I don't know. You know?
Yeah.
I'm not judging.
I my stomach
heavily
took a quick turn.
I'm absolutely judging.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard not to. And this, there are some taboos that we acknowledge as a society, and one is don't eat your boogers.
Yeah, don't be gross.
No, it's probably like harmless in the grand scheme. It's just what the act represents.
I mean, if you're gonna do it,
at least wash your hands.
Do it in your the safety and comfort of your own home, where no one can judge you.
And wash your hands if you interact with other people afterwards.
Yummy.
You know, you don't want to get your booger germs on your friends.
I'm assuming if he's doing that, he doesn't have hand sanitizer in his pocket. So,
damn it! I can't believe how awful we're gonna make MomoCon sound like, because
it is. MomoCon is the best con here in Georgia, because Dragon Con you cannot move around. Mm-hmm. It's so hot. Everyone's trying to take pictures and clogging up the damn freaking hallways. They have 4 hotels. And it still sucks balls, man.
Yeah, I used to sing the praises of Dragon Con, but now it's like too much. Can't handle
more
it.
More like crowded con.
Exactly.
No, not to your standards, Jimmy.
I didn't even know what you said.
Crowded con. Crowded con.
Oh, crowded con. I thought you said frowden con, and I was like, I'm sorry, I don't get it.
No, just crowded.
Okay, crowded con. Yeah, all right.
Hey, you know, I try my best, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, solid attempt.
God, I'm looking at my phone right now. I'm getting a call from a 402 area code. I've been getting these freaking call phone scams every day at the same time.
They want
their
money.
They want in on that sick podcast bucks.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to tell them wrong number again. I don't know. Pennies. Isn't there there's got to be a way to stop that? Whatever. So yeah, I hate to make MomoCon sound even worse than a convention about people eating boogers, but was this a booger eating episode before or after the Undertale improv?
It was before.
So that means Undertale that when improv. We went to the Undertale improv and experienced that, we didn't know how much worse
it could
actually get.
All right. It wasn't that bad. It was just a couple young kids, enthusiastic about Undertale and dressing up as furries. And
that's the conclusion I came to, but it sounded like everyone else in the group wanted to become a roly-poly baking in the sun and just go out and shrivel up in the pavement.
It's just like the older guys in the back, you know.
I think one of them brought one of the performers brought a parent. But anyways, to clarify,
to watch out for those guys.
Wanted to cringe for 10 minutes and then walk out, and decided that the Undertale improv event would be the star show for doing that. And I ended up coming away utterly fascinated, because it explained a lot about why this game has such a wide appeal that it does. You have to even break down the concept. You can't really say Undertale improv and just have an understanding assumption of what that means. What it meant was that 16 to 19 year old children were organizing a panel at MomoCon in which they attempted to act out a improvisational comedy routine using the shtick that these characters conveyed in the game.
Right.
When it actually happened and the pressure was on, all of a sudden they all realized they didn't know what they were doing and it was awful. But the fact that they went through the ropes, the paperwork, the timing, the logistics to actually make it happen, and then that 200 people showed up and packed the room.
Yeah.
That explained. That's why I was so fascinated, because what that means is that Undertale just has really fucking great characters.
Yeah, I mean,
like if those characters have enough appeal for this group of fans to think they can put on like an hour and a half of improv just based off of the antics of those characters, like that means that the Toby Fox was doing something superbly right. Yeah. Especially if so many people showed up for it to become as popular as it did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Undertale police are hot on the case. You can hear them already.
Oh no. Those are the commenters just waiting for every video that pops up. There's some type of hate or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Undertale is like overrated, you know?
The Undertale, more like hipster tale. That's what it was when like week two, right? In week one, everyone loved Undertale. Yeah. And then week two and onwards, Undertale started to become different things.
Yeah. That's real.
Yeah, lots of goat mothers in
Well, there were some goat mothers. Yeah. A lot of good, some bad. Metatani X's, which I am actually like, I approve. That would be fun.
Yeah.
What?
What?
I got like a sigh, and now I feel like everyone's like silently disapproving.
No, I just don't know what to add to the conversation, so I'm filling dead air by saying yeah.
Yeah, that's a tactic. You know, when I almost fell for the Cutco knife selling scam in high school, I thought you were going to
say at MomoCon, and I was like, George.
Oh, no, entirely different side story.
First
tangent.
Of all, who the fuck bringing Cutco's to fucking convention to sell?
I'm just talking about...
No,
they can pose it as, it's a cosplay, but do you really want to buy nine?
Filling dead air with vocal pauses can be a manipulative sales tactic if you believe enough in the quality of the product.
I'm cosplaying as a victim of a pyramid scheme.
So basically George in high school.
amazing. I play a little bit of Siege, George. Guess what?
Console or PC?
Console.
Okay. Just okay,
You gave me the code.
Yeah.
And I tried it out and I really liked Terra's Hunt back in the days with Vegas. So I tried Terra's Hunt out. And then it was good at first. And then there's suicide bombers that are absolutely ridiculous and turned me off from the whole damn thing. So there you go. That's my review of Siege.
Terrorist Hunt is not that, like, that's not the real mode.
But Terrorist Hunt was great in the other games, though. It was great.
It was also
bots all the time.
Well, yeah, but it's also not a real bot match. It's
just
like
in that
a
game
weird...
Overpowered where I kicked your ass.
Oh, wait, no, I actually won the match we played in Overpowered.
What are you talking about,
I guess it's your word against mine, so you can have it. You know, I just want to say...
Oh, no, don't be the bigger man now.
You know, I could lose gracefully against people like Matt.
This guy was yelling in my ear.
I just want to say...
This guy was yelling in my ear.
That Terrorist Hunt is kind of like the practice mode. Siege is all about PvP. I wish it had a legitimate bot match mode. Don't get me wrong, but the Terrorist Hunt is not the main attraction.
I play a lot of multiplayer. It was fun. Cool. Terrorist Hunt, never touching that again because of suicide bombers. That's it. I'm just giving the thumbs up. Just giving the thumbs up. Oh, I always want to say, Kronos, when you die, you age 1 year. I forgot to say that. That's like the mechanic. And as you age, stats to... like points to go into strength gets higher and arcane damage gets lower. So like in the beginning, strength is like 1 point, and then by the end of the game, it's like 3 points. Arcane is about 3 points in the beginning and it becomes like 1 point later on, and it has like a little thing, which is cool. It's just cool. All right. That's it. That's Kronos. That's Kronos. I just want to give it some justice because it's like the only game when you have a Vive or Oculus, because you can cheat the system to get
I hate
those,
that
those
you even have
Oculus
to
games.
Cheat the system. I wish it was just the system.
Yeah, it's incredibly stupid, and Facebook is dumb. By the way, a new patch came out. I don't know if you knew, like right after that, completely just like reworked everything they did, and it's the same again. Now they could just
official or with the Revive hack.
Oh, the hack. The hack. Official hack.
Yeah. Oh my god. So actually, it doesn't even matter what they did. The Facebook owned company did not backpedal yet.
No.
I have a feeling they will. But I would be surprised if it happened within 1 week. If it happens 2 months, seems like the right window I'm predicting.
I know it's not gonna kill VR, but it still just makes me sad.
Yeah, the less of a headache VR is, the better.
Yeah, I'm glad it exists. Especially like a Dragonfront, which is like a kind of like a VR magic Hearthstone card game that's coming out free to play and is also exclusive. Like people are just like, oh, it's exclusive to Oculus.
Wait, free to play card game.
Yeah.
On VR.
On VR. So you're going to be like Yu-Gi-Oh! When you summon monsters and you see them appear and stuff.
Hey, it's like I'm really looking at a table with cards on it.
Yes.
You know, my immediate reaction was that's stupid. And then you brought that up and that sounds so, I would play the shit
out of a
Yu-Gi-Oh card game that was VR.
Oh, yeah. And like Star Wars Hollow Chest in real life.
And like you hold the fucking, it's okay. It'd have to be on the Vive. Cause the Vive has the
controllers,
the hand controllers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And one hand controller has to represent your stupid arm blade shit. And the other hand controller is for like pulling cards off your deck and putting them into that thing.
That'd be so good.
And then like the CG monsters appear in front of you. I'd play that. That's a worthwhile VR experience, in my opinion.
Hell yeah. Dude, man, you could go even farther. Like get like $100 plastic crap and just attach it to your arm.
Yes.
Dude, just fully do it. There's something Absolutely. Called the Leap Motion that I've been playing with. Like, it's super cheap now because they came out with new software for it and the hardware is old and they're going to like redo it. But basically, they track your hands in VR. You tape it or Velcro it to the top of your headset, whatever it is, and you hold your hands in front of it and it tracks your fingers and hands incredibly well. It's called, look up the Orion patch if people are interested on YouTube, Leap Motion Orion, and that software has like changed the game for motion tracked without anything, just your hands. It's the most ridiculous thing to do, but yeah, like that would be sweet. Like you just hold the cards up in your hand just by just holding your hand up, like oh my god, it makes the future so bright.
Yeah,
and now they're almost curing. They're doing a vaccine for cancer. The future looks great. The future
that's what we're all about here on the TOVG podcast is optimistically looking forward to how great the future is going to be.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
We like to keep a sunny disposition over here. We like to really hammer the good vibes.
Yeah,
which is why we'll be talking about Metal Gear Solid Pachinko Machine after the break.
Bum, bum, ba-da.
Bush.
Wow. The Bush.
Tribes. So do you guys want to know what the biggest news story this week is about?
Does it have something to do with Big Boss?
It has to do with how devastation, desecration.
Oh.
Desolation.
What a mess we made when it all went wrong.
You know, my friend, he's like, oh, did you see the new Metal Gear? And I was like, what do you mean I didn't see the new Metal Gear?
It's
he's
wild.
Like, you're joking, right? It's like a joke video. And he like sends it to me. And he's like, oh, here's a new Metal Gear. And I saw that as a pachinko machine.
Remember when Konami filed a patent for Big Boss pachinko machines last year?
Yeah.
Yes.
They have made good on that with a super high-tech, flashy-looking game of the like fan favorite part of the series. The most like MGS3 is the most sacred corner of the whole Metal Gear pantheon. And it's like they know. I'm sure they know. I'm sure that this is just that old wrinkly man who's been the CEO of Konami for 70, basically like the king of Konami, the dynastic ruler, who just inherited the dictatorship and won't ever let it go.
Yeah.
He's just like, forcing these depressed artists to make really high quality assets for a pseudo remake of MGS3 that is a pachinko machine.
Yeah. So if you're in Japan and you need some groceries done, just go and play some Metal Gear. You know, yeah. get some groceries on the way home.
You can bring it home along with calorie mates and raw snakes.
Yeah.
And Kenyan mangrove crabs.
I would like some pachinko machines here, to be honest. Like, what if no. I want some dinner? You know, you go in. Well, I mean, gambling is legal here, so they wouldn't have like gift cards or whatever like that for the groceries. But
yeah. You got to understand. I think you might be imagining pachinko as something it's not. Pachinko takes time. It takes like 3 to 5 minutes of sitting down in a chair where you just kind of watch balls fall down pegs. And then a flashy high-tech video with sometimes your favorite media licenses will play like a fight scene where you got to mash a button to make the movie play, but the balls keep falling down the pegs, and there's like a 1 in 3 million chance the button you press might relate to some kind of random bonus, but it's a little bit more of an obligation than just like a quick hit a button on a Redbox machine at the grocery store.
You know what? What I got out of this, because this happened like yesterday or 2 days ago.
Yep. I got a text at 5 a.m. What did you get?
Well, I saw it on Twitter at like 5 a.m. and I was like, huh, that's happening. And it was Jim Sterling tweeting about it and a couple other people that I know that are like Metal Gear Solid people that were tweeting about it. And before the other pachinko machines and all the other, you know, fucking Konami things happening, everyone was like, I can't fucking believe this one. Everyone was like,
it was bound to happen eventually.
And honestly, I think that Konami has like literally become like the incredibly racist grandpa of the video game industry, where it's like, we all know that what they're doing is terrible. The things coming out of their mouth are very wrong and bad, and we wish that they would stop, but we just kind of have to go, well, they're stuck in their ways, and the only way for it to end is when they die, and now we're just accepting it, and yep. I find that terrible and also kind of a little funny.
And I think that the rank and file know, like the tone of this trailer... And yeah. I don't know if I'm like reading too hard into the blue draperies, but there's this scene where the camera focuses on Snake, like looking really sad. And then it zooms out and he is literally surrounded by prison bars of pachinko machines.
Oh, my God.
And the last shot is that manly tier. Like, Matt, you know.
Yeah, I know.
That is the scene they picked to end this trailer on, is like the part of the chronology where everything goes to shit.
Why Snake Eater? Out of all the snake, why Snake Eater?
It's not even the like flashiest, coolest one. If they wanted the brightest lights with the most strobing effects, they would do Pachinko MGS4, where you would have Raiden ninjaing around robots.
Exactly.
They picked the like the good depressing one. Drab one. Well, yeah, but also the one that doesn't have like as easily marketable toy characters.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Like they all do, but I guess the most easily marketable toy character of them all is Raiden, and you're not going to find Raiden in this one. All right. That yeah. Cyborg Raiden, that is. Gotta clarify.
With soft butt cheeks to squeeze. Mm. Yeah. This is sad. If people want to know what pachinko machines, how they look like and how they operate, look up Winning the Mega Jackpot Japan Arcade, and you see like these two Aussies like just like winning the jackpot and seeing all these coins just fly out. We have something like this in America, actually, where you put the coin in and you hopefully you can knock over some more tokens and stuff, but it's mm-hmm. nowhere near as like a ball rolling around to get like double XP and getting all these yeah. jackpot stuff. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's another thing. Like, they will have words like XP or critical strike or massive yeah. damage flashing on the screen in these video game based pachinko machines, but they don't actually mean that. Mm. It's just kind of like random window dressing for old people who are like, oh yeah, my kid plays Metal Gear. I know what that is, right? That's the thing. Are they even play the Metal Gear machine because it's something different to make my gambling addiction a little more interesting? Fuck!
Like, are they even like getting more money because it's Metal Gear? It would be depressing to go there and see like it makes no difference. It's just doing this. They're just like,
I really don't know. That's the thing is, there's actually a legitimate issue with the pachinko industry. Like, a big problem they're having is that their audience is old people, and it's really hard to tell if the companies that are mildly related to video gaming are pushing out video game branded pachinko means just to rotate new IPs through the industry, or if they're actually trying to make an attempt to market to younger Japanese consumers rather than the old guard, which is going to be much like the racist Konami grandfather. Like, these old people can't keep playing pachinko forever.
Yeah, the old guard is going to the graveyard very soon.
Yeah. And what's going to happen to the rest of us when that happens? What will we be left in good hands?
Maybe State Farm.
Remember when video games were different from gambling?
I remember.
Pepperidge Farm remembers.
Pepperidge Farm.
State Farm.
It's actually kind of side tangenty point, but I was talking to a friend over the past weekend, and we got to talking on Uncharted 4 and this pachinko, like the adding game elements that don't really mean anything into pachinko kind of made me think of this. He was saying that like a lot of people pan Uncharted 4 for being like not really a game, like it kind of autoplays almost everything. And like the puzzles are very easy and the shooting is very easy, and like, but like people still love it and it still gets like 10 out of 10s and everything. And he was saying that he doesn't think it's a bad game because it's more a game that's marketed towards people who don't play games, because the game makes you feel like you're good at games even though you don't play them. Like, you don't have to be good at video games to be good at Uncharted. So it makes you feel like you're good at the game.
Matt, are you okay back there?
Yeah, I'm okay.
You holding up?
This is his quote. His quote, not mine.
Oh no.
It sounds like you're falling off the edge though. Are you?
I'm trying to pull myself back up.
This is his quote, not mine.
No.
You got it?
I'm good.
Okay, now that you're back, do you have any 2 cents to add? Because you're the Uncharted guy.
No, I wanted to unify that with this thing that, like, do you think that they're adding these game elements to make pachinko feel like legitimate video games with like a purpose and objective?
Yeah, totally.
And fail state.
I think it's a way to get these old men a little more hooked in the loop of pressing buttons and watching coins fall down tables that have pegs all over them.
You could literally win just doing nothing. Like,
well, pressing
one button. Like, it actually says slam the button, slam the way, well, it doesn't say it, but
pull
you can
the
see
lever.
The action. Yeah, pull
hit
the lever.
Hit the lever. That's the one.
Hit the lever.
Yeah. It's easy. It's just money. It just wants you to put more and more coins in.
Asia is weird. We will never understand, even though we try hard to pretend we do. Which is the feelings I was mulling over when reading news of Nintendo relocalizing the Chinese versions of Pokemon, and how a lot of Hong Kong customers don't like it. Really interesting story.
I saw a lot of people on my feed that were like posting this in like a, what the hell, people? It's not worth protesting over, but like without reading it. Because that was my knee jerk. And then I looked, because the headline sells it so short. So it was like Hong Kong protesters march against the renaming of Pikachu. And then it's like, wow, that's dumb. And then you read it and it's like, oh,
well, I don't know. Like, it's not. I could easily imagine the American market reacting the same way. Like, if they chose to rename Pikachu is a mega mascot.
Yeah.
Right. But like the way like making the protest seem like it was about Pikachu is a problematic way to frame this, because in the end, it's about preserving Cantonese.
Yes.
Which is a completely different issue and a much more important one than Pikachu.
And more politically charged. And then, like, that's why this is such an interesting story, is because we get a little window at the political cultural dynamics of mainland China versus Hong Kong by way of this video game getting localized to a language that one of those two chunks don't like. And so, yeah, that's the thing. Cantonese is Hong Kong, I think. Super duper quick research that I just dotted down on the outline. I'm sure none of us are experts on this situation.
All I know is my friend speaks Cantonese, and that's pretty much it.
So, do you know where your friend's from? Or if your friend is from anywhere?
I'm pretty sure he's from China, but I don't know. I don't know where it resides.
What I gathered is that Cantonese is spoken around the southern areas of China, centralized around Hong Kong. Mandarin and other versions of China are the north end that Beijing would, as part of any cultural effort from any country, try to impose on other parts of populaces that would be compatible with their cultural standards. So what you have is a group of protesters who actually don't necessarily want to be protesting the game so much as the Mandarinization of southern China and Hong Kong. There's a quote from one of the protesters who, let's see if I have a name. There is a guy named Wang Yong Tat, founder of Civic Passion, a radical localist group which seeks independence from China, saying, "Our culture and language is threatened by the Beijing government, Mandarin and simplified Chinese," which is like, the threat is coming from the language. This is what Metal Gear Solid 5 was about. The bad guy in Metal Gear Solid 5 was really mad that he was forced to learn English and shitloads of other languages as his homeland was being conquered by other forces.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I think it's a hard thing to sympathize with coming from a largely English-speaking country that doesn't really have any ancient backgrounds their language.
Really? Because, you know, think of how many people in America are still speaking the languages of the Native Americans, which is another huge, incredibly depressing and politically charged issue that is the same shit happening, but so downplayed because English is, I don't know, I feel really English has, like, become so dominant we don't even think about it.
That's what I'm saying. It's hard to be inherently sympathetic when it's like, I've spoken English all my life and I don't really like look back to another language that's like, you know, like I Russian heritage, but like the Russian that I learned and don't remember much of is not like a dying language Russian. It's just like standard Russian. And so like you really have to take a step to like think about these kind of things to like, you know, figure out where you draw importance on them, which is probably why this seems like such a non-issue to a lot of people. But I don't know. It's very interesting that, like,
I'm surprised it seems like a non-issue. I don't know. Like, I really, well, I mean, would like to
it
see
doesn't
the comment
seem like one to me.
I'm, make it seem like yeah. that. Cause
like I said, a lot of people on my feed were like, "What the fuck, Chinese people? It's just Pokemon." And I'm like, that's not.
Yeah, but when you read the first two lines of the article, you're like, "Oh, it's politics." That's
what I'm saying. People are using misleading headlines. It's not a protest about Pikachu. It's not about Pikachu. It's about language and heritage and stuff. Like,
well, people on the internet are being not informed properly and just making decisions without knowing the full picture.
I mean, we still feel some of that burn. Like, look at the shitstorm that happened when they didn't import DOA X3, or not import, when they didn't make a localized version for that. Like, a lot of American gamers felt like something that was theirs was being taken away, even though it always was completely out of their control.
Yeah.
Like a good neighbor.
State Pepperidge Farm remembers.
Yes. Yes.
So, rewinding a bit back to MomoCon, we hung out with the best friends. Matt and Wooly were down here. Matt brought his wife, Leanna. We all had a big dinner at Savage Pizza one day. And yeah. they were talking about how much they loved the VR version of Superhot, which if you get that up and running, Matt, I'm coming over
It's not out yet. So but, they played a demo version. Mm-hmm. The Superhot is coming out on touch with when the touch controllers come out. So that's going to be kind of like one of their release thing. Exclusively for the Oculus Rift. That's the word. Oh my gosh, I'm getting so tired. That's fine. Revive exists. You guys who bought Revive, don't worry. Don't worry. I mean, somebody going to crack it.
That's the new story. It's exclusive to Oculus for now.
The fucking VR is not a console.
It's not.
It's a peripheral for machines to run games. It's like not to sell it short, it does much more incredible things than one of these, but it's like a Guitar Hero controller. Like, I can use that to play Rock Band.
Or Dark Souls.
It's a controller with buttons on it. Or Dark Souls. Like,
the thing is, I've tried more headsets than just the Vive and Oculus. There are other headsets out there. I don't want the market to just be choked to death because, people want to be greedy. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think it can afford it this early.
And I'm wondering what kind of deal got striked? What kind of deal was struck? What kind of deal was struck? Language.
So money.
So how much money were they getting from Oculus in order to make the setback of it being exclusive to Oculus profitable over the greater sales they would have made by making some kind of open compatible version? If that is even, that's possible, right? Like, it has to be. I want a headset now just to know what I'm talking about, because I don't know, Matt. Maybe you should take it away on this one.
Maybe they need money. We don't know their financial situation. I don't know. Maybe they Oculus approached them and the deal was just too good. You know, the fruit was just too sweet.
I wouldn't be
because
surprised
Valve won't come to them and say, "Oh, make it for this exclusive," because Valve, their Steam VR is open. Like, you don't even have to use the controllers, the Vive controllers. I can use my Leap Motion with some drivers and use my hands as controllers. Like, that's how open it is.
Can you hold a virtual controller
in your hand?
God.
And when you pull the trigger like a gun, it pulls the trigger. When you close your three fingers other than your index, it closes like the hand grip. And then if you push your thumb down, it actually controls the trackpad. That part doesn't work too well, but everything else works like decently. Like, it's just a beta thing that, you know, lets you walk around in like Vive games if you want, if you have a something else other than a Vive. Just like I think exclusivity is stupid, and it just kind of kicks out all the people who want to use their phones or want to buy something else other than an Oculus Rift or a Vive, which I'm pretty sure other headsets are going to come out. I mean, you see Star VR, you see just little companies here and there like trying to make something. Obviously, it's not as clean as the Vive and Oculus, but you know, you want competition in the market like this. You want people to innovate. You want people, you don't want people like Intel, where they just constantly just crushing AMD and they can just raise their prices so damn high. You know, I'm not saying Palmer Luckey will do it, but I'm pretty sure Facebook, you know, they like that money. So just like this exclusivity.
Also, Superhot. It's Superhot. It's not going to be a system seller, but it's definitely going to be a feather in their cap, because this is a game that would change drastically in VR. Like, being able to dodge bullets in slow motion with your head tracking would be a great feeling.
Mm. Yeah, I bet. Like, I was watching. I was like, I really want to play this, because I came home when Wooly said that. He's like, dude, have you played Superhot? And I was like, wait, is it out? That's out yet?
Oh, they loved it. Like, that's what changed their mind on VR, was playing Superhot on it.
And it was not there. And it was just not there. I was like, no. I was so ready, dude. I was so ready. But yeah, it's not out yet. That's a day one purchase for me. since I, yeah, those experiences are pretty
you
cool.
You already have Super Hot though, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I don't know if they're going to have, it sounds like it's going to be a separate thing. I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be a separate
let's
thing.
See.
It, 'cause it's like Super Hot VR instead of a VR patch for Super Hot.
Yeah. The you know, rock,
especially
paper,
if it being exclusive and it's already on Steam right now, it looks like it's going to be a separate thing.
The RPS shotgun words it, RPS shotgun, the RPS article, this press release words it as an Oculus Rift exclusive VR edition is expected to release later this year. So it might actually be a separate product from what we played earlier this year.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't played it either way, so.
Oh, Super Hot's good. Well, I was also wanting to say that it wouldn't surprise me if Super Hot didn't sell as well as they were expecting, because people shat on that game hard.
Yeah.
Even
yeah.
though it's really good. It's like,
probably because people didn't understand it from what I
heard. It's $20.
It has short campaign length and lack of content. 25. But I mean, for like $20, $25. I don't know. I was totally fine with it. It was one of my favorite things I was playing. Probably still, like, I have super fond memories of just like cranking up Metal Gear Rising music and playing 2 hours straight of endless arcade mode and forgetting where all that time went.
Yeah, doing that in VR would be quite nice.
Next up, we have a straight positive story. I don't think there's really any way to look at the dark side of this one. GOG,
I wish it was the other way around.
What do we mean?
Well, go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
GOG is launching a new service that ports a few eligible Steam products over to your GOG library, which, if you've ever used GOG, means you get an installer that you can keep around on a disk and save for the future, as opposed to Steam, where it's a more nebulous thing where you're logging online and doing the install through the client.
Right.
So what they're going to be doing is rotating in and out of a selection of games by the few months. You have a small window to redeem a game and move it over to your GOG account, but once you do, it stays there permanently. And I guess they're doing that rotational thing because the deal they're striking with developers might hinge on temporary licenses. And also they want some incentive to keep people checking up on what's new at the GOG store this month. You know?
Makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So when you check in to see what Steam games you can transfer over to your GOG games, you look at... Oh, look, TIE Fighter's $4. Fine, whatever. I'll throw it in the cart.
Remember one time I was on GOG for one thing. I wanted one thing. And then suddenly my cart had 20 games in it, and I was like, hold on. Let's stop. Let's stop right now. And I emptied it out, and I bought my one thing, but they almost got me.
That's how they get you.
Real quick. Mm-hmm. Starting out on this GOG Connect. Look at the top of the list there. Is that the witness?
Oh.
Is that the witness?
The whiteness.
Hey, man.
The whiteness is here.
I'm offended.
The whiteness.
There was a lot of white in the witness.
There was.
We're in like the
There's
first
also a
and
lot
the last
of every other color.
Pure white.
No. Let's focus on the negative.
First room was pitch black.
I don't remember a lot of cyan. Although I think all other colors were represented well, but cyan doesn't get enough love.
Yeah,
I'm gonna boot up the game and find cyan just to send you a screenshot.
It sounded like you were just gonna like jump out the window from frustration.
I mean, no, because
so
obviously your complaint that cyan is underrepresented in the witness is not a legitimate
one.
So
you know, if you want to have a self-install backup of the witness,
which I do,
if you're Jimmy Belikoff and you want to make a little shrine in your room where you can put a time capsule box with a disc of the witness on it, then that you'll open again when you're on your deathbed.
Put that shit in a flash drive. Come on.
So,
we're not heathens.
So that when you're lying on your deathbed and you want to go through it one more time, it'll be there for you. Thanks to GOG Connect.
It seems like The Witness is like perfect for that GOG release, though. Like, it just seems like that game you want, like kind of like Myst, like that Myst feel. Like, oh yeah, let me load up Myst real quick. Yeah. And let me see if I remember if all the ridiculous puzzles.
You might understand.
You know what they... I wish that GOG had some sort of launcher, to be honest. Like, oh, I like launchers. They do?
GOG Galaxy, yeah.
Oh, okay. Man, I haven't used GOG in forever. The last thing I got on GOG was all three of the Roller Coaster Tycoon games, like the full versions of each. And I hooked them up to Steam. And I don't, like, it bugs the shit out of me that I can't see how many hours I've played. Because, like, I don't know why that arbitrary number is important to me, but I like to look at it and see, like I've played 100 hours of Amnesia the Dark Descent because I practiced speedrunning it for a long time. And so I like looking at that number and remembering, like, oh, yeah, I used to speedrun that game. It was good times.
It's like achievements. Like, it's just there.
It's all,
just there.
But it's just, like, more of a personal thing, like, oh, yeah, I remember I put a lot of time in that, and I think back to that the time that I put in. It's a weird thing, but...
Yeah, I had that when I looked back at my 360 achievements because I got, like, over 60,000. And I look back and see, like, my first game I played... And how many achievement points I played in it. And you could totally tell, like, oh, yeah, I remember that. Oh, I don't have that many achievements in it because I played multiplayer most of the time and even touched this, like, the story mode. Like, it just brings back so much memories of old, like, days just sitting there in your underwear and playing games all Saturday morning. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
So, speaking of watching. Speaking of tracking personal details of your life through the internet, there is going to be a sequel to a game that featured that as a primary theme. It was called Watch Dogs. Do you guys remember Watch Dogs? You might have forgotten, but
remember it. Yeah.
Okay. Jimmy, do you remember Watch Dogs? It was really forgettable.
I remember. I remember hearing the name for like 2 years.
And then
I remember seeing a trailer where some like white terrorist looking guy that was just like walking around in broad daylight with a baseball cap and a scarf over his face had a phone. And that was like the trailer. And then I remember it coming out and everybody being like, holy shit, this was such a letdown. And then I was like, cool. Glad I never got invested in that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very let down. Like it made it seem like you were like this mobile hacker guy, and not that.
Well, the problem is that all depends on more level design than game design. Like, how many hackables did the level designer place in this room? There's one gunfight in like the first act of the game where you sneak into someone's apartment and then you get caught and you have to shoot your way out of his alleyway to the street. And there's a shitload of hackables all over that alleyway, and it's pretty all right.
Yeah.
And the rest of the game is just like a really mediocre, like bad version of GTA.
Yeah.
Sequel's coming out. We've known for a while, but we got an official confirmation. We got the first piece of official material is a picture of a presser that the Rad Brad got and posted on Twitter. So that technically counts as a leak because, I don't know. Does it? I don't really. He didn't specify that he was under NDA or anything, and I doubt he gave a shit anyway. But the very next day, they mailed out an official press release saying that they're going to present it at E3 during the Ubisoft show. So,
this E3 is going to be interesting.
If you're writing articles for about every day's E3 summaries, you're going to be watching that Ubisoft show from beginning to end and tearing up your psyche inside. Sorry, memories of last year flooding back to me. And there was that one moment where Aisha Taylor was talking Assassin's Creed cosplayer in the audience about how someone left the Christmas lights on during like just word salad was coming out of her mouth, and it was the whole E3 show in a microcosm. Like Aisha Taylor ran out of stuff to say, so she just started saying word salad.
Oof.
You're really hot. I'm into guys with wickets. Who left the lights on during the apocalypse? What does that even mean?
she's the reason why I hate E3.
Is it because? No, maybe not.
Don't make a YouTube video about it, Jimmy.
Don't make this a race thing, man. I'm not going to. I have been very consistent in my opinion over the past few years. Every time Aisha Tyler steps on stage, I need to leave the room.
She was okay, like the first one, I remember, right? Like people generally liked her the first time.
First show from beginning to end.
It's been a train wreck.
I watched all the shows last year, beginning to end, and the Ubisoft and the PC gaming show they're the standout memories for how bad E3 gets.
No.
Oh man. I love when they talk about sports. Like that's the best part.
Yeah, because it's over and done with and they don't really have to. Well, actually no, they do have to gussy it up with celebrities who don't know what the hell's going on, but
Aisha Tyler.
Yeah, I play games. Yeah.
Damn, that looked just like me.
Yeah. Oh man. Oh, that was the best. Oh yeah, I remember that.
It's Hoop God.
Oh, I love it.
I remember that show, I posted a tweet that when they were presenting the amazing new technology of their face scanning feature, which was a feature in previous NBA games that didn't work at all. I posted a tweet of the hilarious results and it got like 2,000 retweets. It was the most popular thing I've ever tweeted. It's just like a stupid picture of NBA Live's face scanning technology not working next to a quote of a NBA Live executive officer talking about how great their face scanning technology is. And that's like all it takes. That's the iron you got to strike while it's hot when you're covering E3.
Live cringe is the best.
No, it's not. I tried. It ruined me for like 3 weeks last year.
Live cringe. Just like sitting there and what, like, yeah, he said that. Don't you know how you have those moments where you're like, man, I wish I didn't say that in front of five people. Oh, imagine just a lot of thousands of people are watching you and you just say something so stupid and you just go on
Peggle 2. Remember that one? Remember Peggle 2?
I remember there was a moment last year where EA was announcing Garden Warfare something or other and this the ugliest thing I've ever seen in my life ran out into the stage with Tom Petty's Danger Zone playing in the background. Like,
was it Aisha Tyler?
No, Aisha Tyler. There's some mascot character in Plants vs. Zombies who's
it's like the superhero zombie.
It's so ugly. It's goddamn ugly.
By the way, to be in all fairness, that last jab at Aisha Tyler was just for joke purposes.
Don't explain.
I don't want to seem. I don't want to seem like a total asshole. I just think that she's really bad.
If you make a video about how
conference.
You don't like E3, you'll seem like a total asshole. I've done the experiment.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Well, no.
I mean, I at the same time, I disagree with you on the fact that it's not okay to be excited about like a straight up commercial con because
it's not okay.
I think that it's okay. I think it's okay.
It's not okay. Anyways.
Dude.
Also, if you like Aisha Tyler, you can like her and enjoy her Ubisoft conference. I don't care.
I just don't like her Ubisoft conference.
I just hate it every time.
She's okay in other things.
Yeah.
Why did they pick her for the Ubisoft conference?
Because people liked it the first time and just kept doing it.
Did people like it the first time? I remember everyone making fun of hashtag Girlwood. Was that during her first show or her second one?
I can't remember. It's been 3 years.
They all blend together.
I think I came into it after. I think I came into it in the second one. I don't know. Anyways,
anyway,
I will say I'm not doing E3 this year. I'm out. I'm done.
I am.
But I also on the podcast, I should have mentioned this earlier. I'm not going to do a video or tweet at all about Metal Gear Solid Pachinko. I'm giving it no coverage. This is the hot exclusive. George rants about Metal Gear Solid.
#equivalent
gone sexual. This is all.
Oh hell yeah!
This is all the ranting you're getting out of me because I don't want to cover it from an actual journalism angle.
Yeah, this is the equivalent of George just not replying to the
massive tweets.
Super super racist grandpa when he asks him a question about that black friend you have, and then George is just like,
I just look away and chew the mashed potatoes and wonder how soon I can get home.
just scoop a massive pile onto your plate again so you don't have to open your mouth for anything but mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
We've all been there.
Mashed potatoes taste way better than grandpa.
That's a...
Whoa. Wait a minute.
Let's move on.
Wait, what?
Moving on.
Hang on.
Ubisoft is releasing a $15 Rainbow Six Siege starter pack. This is weird. This is a really weird movement. Because this is like... Rainbow Six Siege is the one thing Ubisoft has done that I want to sympathize with. Because it's a good game. When you're not playing Terrorist Hunt. And the common criticism is that the price is too high. And that... there are microtransactions in it. So they have lowered the price, but in a way that pushes microtransactions harder to make up for it. The $15 Rainbow Six Siege starter pack, as they're calling it, is the same game as the $60 version. However, grinding for your new heroes takes a god. It's like the time factor is multiplied by... I actually did the math. Hang on, let me press start, hit calculator, type in 240 divided by 32. Wait, no, 240. 7.5. Take 7.5 times longer to grind for...
Jesus.
Let's see, $60 divided by 15. For one-fourth of the cost. So for one-fourth of the cost, you have to grind seven times as longer. So it's kind of a shittier deal. But it's also only $15 now, which like going from $16 to $15 is a huge step. It just seems like clear to me that they really, really want to hang on to the value of this game in some respect. So what you can do in Rainbow Six Siege is spend chump change on microtransaction XP boosters that could theoretically bring this $15 version up to the same speed it would take to grind out all the hero unlocks of the regular $60 version, but you'd probably end up balancing out the budget to around $60 anyway, should that happen. But if you also do want to just try it out and don't want to commit your $60, like, it's a good way. They mention in the system that they're not really rebalancing the short, quick, and easy route to get your first four starter operators, which is to just do the first three situation missions, which are Terrorist Hunt, which are the not good mode. So
I think this is a positive thing.
You can get started on it, but I don't really know if I feel like a lot of players who end up getting this pack and liking it might actually turn out regretting that they bought the starter pack and not the real thing.
I want to ask you to clarify, this nerfs how much renown you get after each match, right?
Correct.
So that means you would have to grind to even upgrade to a silencer or a red dot or any of those
things.
Correct.
When for the rest of us, silencers are stupidly cheap. Like, they're a complete afterthought. You don't have to grind for anything except for new characters.
Yeah.
Because everything else is just so gosh darn cheap, it's a non-issue.
Yeah.
And even then, it doesn't take that long to grind out. In the Ubi blog article, they say that they don't explicitly say it, but I did the math based on the figures they give, that it would take about 32 hours to unlock all 20 of the original operators with the $60 version. Then they also say that it takes about 15 hours to unlock one operator on the $15 starter pack version. If you'll get four within the first 2 hours if you just do those quick and easy single player missions. So that leaves 16 left, which is a 240 hour process ahead of you that took me 30 hours. And I think 30 hours is fine. Like, the fact that it actually was only 30 hours is the reason why I get defensive about this game when people try to attack it from the microtransaction angle, because you really don't need or want or even really tempted to be spending money on microtransactions if you've played for 30 hours, which the game's fun enough to make those 30 hours go by fast. So this actually, on one level, I get it. It seems like a solution to the problem, but it also like reifies and brings to life the big criticisms that this game is always faced as a ball and chain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man.
Well, like fixing one problem The other two kind of grow a little bit larger, even though the one problem is just like totally fixed and void. Like $15 is absolutely a non-issue compared to 60. Like that makes it, I think, on par with Counter-Strike Go now. So it really is a big step. It's just complicated.
Yeah. Huh.
Well, there you go. There you go.
Yeah. Jimmy, how long do you have to play? How does unlocking new characters in Overwatch work?
You have them all from the start.
No. There you go.
That's well. Yeah, it's because Overwatch avoids the very common problems with games like League of Legends and Dota and stuff, in that since team composition pretty much defines the gameplay experience, if it cut off any characters from anybody, it would lessen the experience and make some players inherently have an advantage by having more characters. Huh. So instead, it gives you every character from the start.
Yeah.
All your unlocks are cosmetic, and by getting random drops every time you level up, you could get like a legendary skin for a character you don't play, which incentivizes you to maybe try out that character. And I have actually learned several characters and like played the entire roster because of like, oh, I got a skin for Winston. It's a really good skin. I'm going to try out Winston. I ended up like figuring out why he's good and like enjoying playing him. I think Overwatch's drop system is fantastic. I think a lot of people that I play with say it's too slow and kind of infuriating, but I think that as a longtime League player, it seems like such a step up for me from previous things. Like League and TF2 both have worse drop systems, in my opinion. So yeah, it feels fine grand to me, and I get to play all the characters I want. So.
Sieges was never perfect. The problem it had before was that after hour number 6, your rate of unlocking new characters would just slow down to the point where you'd have to settle with whatever you picked earlier until like between hour 6 and I want to say 15 is when I started to feel like I had unlocked almost everything I really wanted, and then the other rest of the time was spent just wrapping it all up. But I feel like this might make that a little worse, because now a good chunk of the player base is going to have a fundamentally different experience than another chunk of the player base.
That's very interesting.
Yes. Isn't that a common problem you want to avoid, is dividing the player base?
Yeah, definitely. That's why paid for map packs are such a poor idea, because anybody who does not pay for the map pack now has a fundamentally different game.
It's just weird that this is like kind of going in the opposite direction. Like they're making the game cheaper almost a year after launch for the divided chunk of the player base. Mm-hmm. Usually it's like they're dividing it up between the players who spend more, and now they're like dividing it between the players who spend less. So it's like a little bit more pro-consumer, but still exhibits what might turn out to be some of the same problems. I don't know. Yeah. I'm kind of interested. I'm at least happy that it's going in the opposite direction of favoring big spenders.
Mm. Random interlude, I guess, because this news just dropped a few hours ago. Apparently Titanfall 2's announce window or launch window has been announced.
Oh, what is it?
It's like a general zone, but they said it's launching within 3 weeks of Battlefield 1, and I think before. So it's going to be like right up against Call of Duty this year. They're just going to like launch side
by
side.
I would totally be okay with a dumb, stupid Call of Duty space shooter releasing around the same time a probably good, actually interesting space shooter. With giant robots that you wrangle.
They have swords.
I'm actually interested to play the story.
Weeks before a dumb, stupid World War I history porn shooter. I'm totally okay with that situation.
Yeah. It's interesting that, because Titanfall and Battlefield are both EA. So it's interesting that they're going to put their war games back to back within a month of each other.
I think it's a... I think they can be fairly confident. Those two brands won't bleed over into one. There was more of a bleed between, I would say, like Medal of Honor and Battlefield Battlefield and Titanfall. Titanfall's a different beast, which I had different a lot of fun with during the beta.
Mm. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, you got to use your Ogroid oil for Titanfall and Hanged Man's Venom for... I'm sorry, I'm making bad Witcher jokes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry. I would laugh if I understood them at all.
I don't think you would even laugh. They're just that bad.
No.
And that's what we're all about here on the TOVG podcast, is embracing the failures, learning from our mistakes, turning the bad jokes around into segues that really help us move on with our lives and improve as people.
Mm.
You see, that's what we are going to be all about right now, because we're at the bottom of the news and we gotta wrap up. I'm doing a dad stream too afterwards, so I'm looking forward to that.
Nice.
If I say something stupid on the dad stream, then people listening to this will know now, but I don't know what I said right now.
We'll never tell.
Wow, it feels strange after a couple cluster casts that it was like a extremely
podcast
mellow.
That ends on a ends on an even note. It doesn't
no
flashlights talk about flashlights at any point.
I know that dragon cancer crap. I mentioned it now. Damn it.
Mm.
Did you mention the bush?
Oh yeah, always. We did. Always.
Always mention the
ladies,
bush.
Gentlemen, send this to your moms.
That's my secret, Cap. I'm always the bush.